overarching things that we've got going on. We have at least one practitioner.
Okay, I'll just briefly introduce myself. I'm a faculty member, a soil scientist from University of Idaho. And what I'm going to be talking about today are some efforts we're trying to make to really look at what's going on in our schools and to get information to them that teachers that they really need and will be able to use in the classroom. So really trying to develop very practical things that can be utilized pretty easily and also very inexpensively. Maybe that's the most important part at this point. This project actually grew out of a planning grant, USDA, what's called the LTPA, Long-Term Agricultural Project. And that is an integrated program, research, extension, and education. So one of our big efforts is going towards really trying to get our research results in a form that can actually be used, again, quite easily and inexpensively by our teachers. Real quick, my co-authors are Catlin Wolf, who's in Ag and Extension Education at University of Idaho, Benjamin Swan, who was at U of I in Ag and Extension Education, who's now at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and Sanford Eidenbrode, who's an entomologist at the University of Idaho as well. We developed this project. We invited a group of stakeholders. So these included farmers, it included agency reps, and included a large number of people from the industry, agricultural industry in general. And we asked them what were the biggest issues basically that they were facing at that point in time. And many of them were actually very interested in this issue that agriculture seems to have a very bad or poor rep, basically. So people don't really understand what agriculture is about in general. And so I found that very exciting that they were really interested in this and keyed in on the fact that we really aren't teaching agriculture to a great extent, at least in some of our schools in the region. And that paired with these recommendations that came out of a National Research Council report, really recognizing the fact that we need to generate more information and get children, especially, interested in agricultural type careers at an earlier stage, kind of set a foundation for the project that I'm talking about today. And these recommendations, you can see up here, there are a number of them. These are just the ones that I thought pertain mostly to K-12 education. There are others that pertain, of course, to undergraduate and graduate programs. But essentially to increase the number of professionals trained to really understand all of the dynamics that go into agricultural systems. So not just soils or plant, but all these sociological economic issues. Increase the relevancy of agriculture to other fields. Okay, so people sort of have that understanding that agriculture isn't just affecting other people. Okay, I like to eat. How do I get my food? And again, integrating agriculture, we talked about this earlier in our groups, integrating agriculture into different disciplines. So in this project, we're not just focusing on ag teachers. We're really identifying chemistry teachers, biology teachers, environmental science teachers as well. To provide experiential learning opportunities concerning agriculture for students of all ages, so that's one of the goals of our project as well, and to promote general interest in agriculture, science, and careers. So in general, with all that kind of background information, our objective here is to really introduce new educational approaches concerning agriculture and also climate change, and that's a big focus of ours as well, is to not just talk about climate change and agriculture separately, but also to link the two. So to really get that information out on how climate change might affect agriculture and how agriculture might lead to mitigation of climate change in many ways as well. In particular, okay, that's kind of a broad overall goal of the project, but in particular we want to focus on agricultural literacy, okay, building those skills and again general knowledge of agriculture among the citizens at large. Problem-solving skills, which are critical at all ages, and experiential interdisciplinary education. So really getting the children involved and hands-on. An example of that is what we do in our undergraduate programs at the University of Idaho, where we actually have students working on our student-run farm. So
to accomplish this, we thought we'd better start by actually talking to teachers and figuring out what's exactly going on in the school and what materials they would need, and also what are some of their barriers. Why aren't they actively teaching agriculture, soil science, agronomy in their classrooms? So we designed a survey to try to accomplish this. This, you can see, is our region. Okay, this is a regional project that is actually University of Idaho, Oregon State University, as well as Washington State University. So we cover a wide range of different areas here. So you can see the counties outlined in red. And we designed the survey to really address these major questions that we had going forward into this project and trying to develop something that would be practical and implemented. So we wanted to look at teachers' perceptions of agriculture, because that might just influence what they decide to teach and what topics they don't teach in their classrooms. We wanted to look at their comfort level with teaching agriculturally related topics. So how easily is that for them? Easy to do is that for them? Do they know about these topics? Do they need more help? What sort of resources do they want? And then again, looking at these barriers to adoption. So we developed surveys. We had one that went to K through 8 grade, and there was about 23 questions on that. And then a separate survey for the older grades, for the 9th through 12th teachers. And in that survey, we included more questions on integration. So how do they integrate with teachers and teaching other topics? So if you had a biology teacher, are they building curriculum and lesson plans with other teachers, with environmental science teachers, or with chemistry teachers, so on and so forth, or even with the ed teachers. We had a combination of ratings, asked them to rate if they agreed or disagreed with the topic, and also some very open-ended responses. Okay, and of course we got this approved through the University Institutional Review Board, which was a new process for me, which wasn't exactly fun. We were able to do that. So how we started is to really get a list of all the primary and secondary schools within that large research area, which ended up taking a lot more time than I originally budgeted for in the project. I figured this would be readily available information.
Yeah, right.
Turns out it is not. So that took quite a while to get that accomplished. And then further, to get all the contact information for the individual teachers. Now, some schools have beautiful websites, and you can easily go and download the list with all the emails of the teachers. Others do not. So that was pretty difficult. We entered all the information into SurveyMonkey, okay, which is an electronic way to send surveys, which I've really enjoyed working through. It was much easier and cheaper than sending out paper surveys to all of these teachers, because as you can see, we had quite a number. Okay, we had 4,344 K through 8 teachers and 3,762 9 through 12 teachers. So this is a huge sampling effort. And if we had to do this with paper surveys, there's just no way we could have afforded to do all the mailing. We sent out a pre-notice on October 7th. Notifying teachers that the survey would be coming through their email in hopes that if it went into the trash in their garbage, it got stuck in their filter, they would actually look and try to grab that out. And then we've sent out the survey was actually sent out October 14th, and then we sent out our first reminder on the 21st. Okay, now this currently, that's as of Friday, when I left the university to travel, we had 630 elementary teachers and about 749 high school teachers actually complete the survey. So we're pretty happy with these results so far. It's only been a short time, and we've gotten, we're almost reaching 20% there. So we're hopeful that we're going to get a much higher return rate on that. So I'm just going to show you some of the questions. Of course, this is very preliminary. Hey, we haven't even reached our goal of at least having a 30% return rate on the survey yet. So this is just me going through and sort of looking at the responses so far at this point. But we have had 750, at least at the secondary level. So these trends could very well hold up even as the number of responses increases. So what you see here is just, in this case, the number of responses. And this case, I've only shown the secondary data, the data for the secondary teachers, because the patterns were exactly the same for the primary grades. And essentially, we asked them two questions here. One is, how frequently do you incorporate agricultural topics into your classroom, which is this darker green color, and then climate change issues into your classroom? Again, we were looking at both issues at the same time. And you can see that the dominant response here is about 2 to 3 times per year. We have teachers that commented that they do it daily, and those are likely our ag teachers. And we do know what they teach, so we can separate out those responses. And then we had a number of teachers over here that said they never incorporate agriculture or climate change issues at all. And we do have questions that sort of delved into that. Why do you do that? Why don't you? What agricultural topics do you choose to teach when you do teach it? What climate change issues are you dealing with? So on and so forth. So we'll be able to get a better idea of exactly what they're teaching. Okay, this is kind of hard to look at, but we wanted to get a better feel for how they look at agriculture, because you can have a very narrow definition of agriculture, or you can have a very broad definition. And this kind of goes back to, how are they viewing agriculture, and does the average teacher, the average person, think that agriculture really pertains to them? Okay, and so we gave them a wide range of choices here, and I've had to abbreviate some of these, but things like animal science, biochemistry, biology, climate change issues, ecology, environmental science, fiber processing, floriculture, so on and so forth. So essentially what you see, okay, 6 would mean the average response was strongly agree, okay, 5 would be moderately agree, 4 would be slightly agree, and then these were all different levels of disagree. But in general, what we're finding here is that teachers have a pretty broad viewpoint of agriculture. Okay, for the most part, they believe that agriculture includes all of these topics. Okay, until you get to some of these that we don't typically associate with. Okay, fiber processing, so that's a little bit out of their viewpoint. Human health, the elementary level teachers rated that a little bit higher than the secondary teachers. Perhaps because of all the programs we have now with really targeting the elementary schools with things like gardening and local produce. Social science was by far the lowest, again rated a little bit higher by the elementary teachers compared to the secondary. So in general, it does look like they have a fairly broad viewpoint of agriculture, which I found personally pretty interesting. The highest rated ones, of course, were the typical topics. Soil science rated very high, so they strongly associate that with agriculture, as well as plant science, horticulture as well. Then we took those topics and asked them how comfortable they were in really integrating them into their curriculum. Okay, so what we see here is that the numbers drastically drop, okay, and there's not very much comfort with some. So an average of if it had received an average of 1, that would be very strongly disagree, mildly disagree, and then slightly disagree here for number 3. So there's not a lot of comfort here with a lot of the topics that they identified as being part of agriculture. Okay. I found this interesting myself in that it looks like the elementary school teachers are more comfortable integrating more topics than the secondary teachers. And that could be because they do teach a wide range of topics on a day-to-day basis, whereas secondary teacher is much more focused on maybe mathematics or science or biology. So those elementary school teachers look like they're a very good place to start with integrating agriculture because they do have a fairly high comfort level. So soil science is over here at about 3.5, and those of you who are soil scientists, I identify with you. You probably know that you are getting calls from local schools interested in materials to try to help them better teach soil science in their classrooms. Okay, we asked them a few questions, and again, this is kind of hard to represent on a slide, but we essentially wanted to ask them how important they felt it was that people really have a basic understanding of climate change and agriculture issues. So we asked them whether or not they thought that basic knowledge of agriculture and climate change, in this case, shown on these bars, is important in making socially responsible and healthy decisions on a daily basis. And in general, they thought it was important, okay? A little bit more for agriculture than climate change. And then we asked them if inclusion of agriculture and climate change would actually enhance their curriculum. We got a little bit lower response there. So they're thinking about it, and they feel that it's important that the general population knows something about agriculture and climate change. But they're not quite sure at this point, based on this data, they're not as sure how that would actually translate into improving their classroom activities. And then finally, we asked them about what sort of barriers they face when they do try to incorporate these topics into their classrooms. Okay. And the big thing that came out here, which is not a huge surprise, because it's probably the same way anybody in this classroom would have filled this out if we were asking you to integrate anything new into your programs at the university, time. So the biggest response here was time and curriculum. Okay, their classrooms are very, very busy, so they're finding it really difficult to incorporate anything new actually into the curriculum. The second was time to prepare, okay, which we all know takes more time than you think, especially if it's a topic that you're not very comfortable with, that you haven't had a lot of exposure to. So by far, those were the biggest barriers that were perceived by the teachers, okay, followed by, again, typical available materials. Okay, so that's a good thing that you guys are trying to target, that we saw in the talks previous to this. They need those materials developed. And funding, okay, and we talked about this in our groups as well. High school teachers that I work with do not have a lot of funding to go out and buy new materials to do these things with their students. Luckily, they did not perceive to a large degree that visible benefits to their students was a barrier, okay, which again I think is a positive thing. They didn't highly indicate that administrative support is a problem, which is a good thing. I mean, we live in Idaho, at least, a very, very conservative environment, and there are some concerns that climate change is not a real thing, not occurring, and so it didn't seem like administrators were forcing that out of the curriculum, at least. Although we did get a few responses that were very interesting, written in responses that we're going to have to go through. A few teachers did indicate that they tried to integrate some topics, but it was not appreciated. So those will be interesting to look at as well. Then, the sobering slide, here as I call it, is that we asked them to rate their level of interest in adopting or participating in different activities or materials that we might develop through this project. So we asked them a range of things. We gave more choices to the primary teachers, just because class field trips and pre-made lesson plans weren't something we were thinking that the secondary teachers would adopt to as a higher degree as the elementary teachers. So we gave them a choice of a 1-week visit, which was not very popular and probably something that they would not take us up on. A 1 to 2 day site visit. Okay, it was a little bit more popular, so again, going back to the time, they don't want to spend a week at one of our field stations doing research with a faculty member. A 1 to 2 day visit was something that they thought would be a little bit more possible. We asked them about having a graduate student come into their classroom and helping them interpret some of our research and actually turning that into lesson plans and other activities. That was of a little bit more interest, especially among those primary grade teachers. Something I was excited about was trying to develop a web-based course on agriculture and climate change that teachers could take for continuing education credits. And I thought a teacher would love this. It's something that they could do from home, they could do in their off time and their off hours. And that wasn't rated very high either, so that one was kind of disappointing to me. And the highest rated ones, meaning the ones that they felt they'd be more interested in participating in, were the class field trips and the pre-made lesson plans. So it seems like what you guys are targeting and doing is very applicable to them. Okay, so in summary, and again, I want to point out this is just a small sampling of the questions that we have in the surveys. There's a lot of, I think, very rich information that we'll be able to pull out of those open-ended questions where they were allowed to actually write in their responses. But first of all, they do seem to recognize the importance of the knowledge of agriculture and climate change topics, and they do have a very inclusive view of agriculture, which I think, again, is a very positive thing. Teachers are not comfortable with many of the key agriculture or climate change topics, and that's going to be a barrier to, especially when they've recognized that time is a very limiting factor. They generally agree that while these topics are important, they don't really strongly agree that it will significantly enhance their curriculum and what they do in the classroom. Again, this lack of time is a big one. And it's something that I think we have to recognize. We have to really develop materials that are very practical and things that they're going to be able to implement without spending a lot of time doing a lot of background research, gathering a lot of materials, and doing a lot of prep. And finally, overall, the interest in professional development activities, at least the ones that we thought of generating through this project, is not very high, at least in our region. And so that's something that's a little bit of a concern. Again, I think we really have to target peer-specific groups. We have to design very good programs. They're going to hopefully see the benefit and want to participate in those more, but this is definitely going to be a challenge.
Thank you.
Clay, I'd like to leave to go with the other group. You mentioned that to the folks that were in here earlier. He's one of the ambassadors for that group of students coming through. So I got roped into finishing up the session. So with that, we're going to start at the back and move forward with questions. We're here for another few more minutes. If folks do have to leave, that's fine. There's nobody coming in here. So as long as there's questions, ask them. So go ahead.
Yes.
The note with the surprise of the response of the teacher saying what they would like and what they would like is not surprising because I find that if they having, if you were to start maybe it's at that locality which might be closer than the county to Idaho, the state where you're at, if you could invite classrooms to come to you to showcase something, that might work. And then the other thing the teachers probably love because of financial issues is you going to them, which of course logarithmically increases your time frame.
Right.
But it's one place to start because what you can do is work out the kinks in something you develop. And I think the only way you're going to get the other teachers in the broader area to go to it is to actually have somebody taking movies of what you're doing and showcasing it.
Right.
Because if the teacher sees how the kids react, and if the kids react in that positive manner, that's a real big itself.
Right. And I didn't mention, we do have sites across that region. So the idea here is that teachers in Washington will be able to go to Lind Station or another research station and participate in something there.
That might be great to start, because you found out they're not really, if you go that route, that gets the word out, and then it spreads, and maybe you can kind of...
That's going to be critical, is getting a group of teachers to participate and hopefully get benefit out of it, and then talking to others.
A letter to the early schools, again, a special thing for a classroom district, especially in the area of grade school area, that third, fourth grade,
right,
would be one good, at least one stop starting point for you that might want to really consider for a starting point.
Right. And one nice thing we were able to do is allow the teachers to say whether or not they wanted to participate in the development of this project and in more of the activities. So a number of them indicated yes. I believe it was more elementary than secondary. And then they were able to leave us their contact information so we can contact them and maybe start with that group that initially said, sign me up.
Yeah, so invite them over and get the feedback.
Right.
I mean, 25 years of doing it, it works that way.
Right.
You get a lot of good feedback, and you tweak your program accordingly, because they'd say, oh, could you do it this way, or could you try this, or could you do that?
Right.
On your questions about the professional development for them, did you have just a question that are you interested in professional development?
We had the question saying which activities would you be interested in participating in? And then we have another question where they were allowed to write in what they would like to. But we didn't have a general question that said, are you interested in or not?
Because it's been my experience over the years in working with teachers, they are interested, but time constraints are so much of an issue.
Absolutely.
For them. Many of them have families that they have to deal with outside of.
Sure.
And so it's not easy for them to take extended periods of time, either having to be away from the classroom, which they don't like, or else being away from their families.
Yeah, and that showed up very clearly in the survey results. And that's an issue for everybody in this room. It's tough.
I got my undergraduate class on vegetable crops approved for teacher recertification in the state of Virginia. It's an online class.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most popular teacher recertification classes there is. I typically have to turn student or high school teachers
yes.
away that are in that program. So it has worked for a while. But that was the key, is getting it approved for that program.
Right.
Also, is Idaho have K-12 standards of learning?
Yes.
So in Virginia, when I broach this subject with teachers, they always say, you know, I can't deviate from the SOLs, and that's really
absolutely.
An inhibiting factor of changing the curriculum, and it's probably the same.
Oh, yes. Anything we develop is going to have to address those standards.
Oh, yeah.
Is your survey available that one might look at the questions that you posed?
Yeah, I think we could do that. We could add non-teachers to the tool if people were interested in taking a look at it. And it is something we hope to publish as well when we get to that point.
The other comment, you said particularly the elementary teachers said that they wanted pre-made lesson plans. They will say that, but they won't use them until they have personal experience with them,
mm-hmm.
which means that you have to have workshops to create familiarity. Otherwise, it's like a book that has a nice cover but never gets opened.
Right.
You don't know what's on the inside.
And that's something we really want to do. And we have that relationship with the ag teachers. You know, the ag teachers come to the school. I work with the with the ag teachers in soil science, they work with an entomologist, they work with a horticulturist, but we don't have that relationship with the other teachers in the other topics, and I think that's the place we really need to put a lot of our efforts. We already have the ag teachers. They come to us on a regular basis. It's the other ones that we need to build a relationship with.
That's in high school level as opposed to grade school.
Yeah, that's high school.
That's where we're inviting the kids over for a day at Idaho State mm-hmm. and having a fun time where they visit a little bit of the horticulture department, the ag department, the environment department, the entomology department. They see the bugs, the birds, the bees, you name it. And
we do some of that to some extent, but more and more.
Make part of it visual, but make part of it hands-on, which would be your lesson plan. And if they see how the kids incorporate into it, how you respond to the kids, and how the kids respond to that lesson plan. That's one selling point. Especially then if you have, and that's going to say, okay, you do that try in fall, you do that in the spring, another year down the line, you do it in the fall and spring, then you have it videoed a couple times so that that goes with it, so they can kind of see how the children have reacted to someone who has presented such a quote-unquote program.
We are past our time, and that's fine. I just want to let you know, if there are questions, you're free to stay and continue this discussion, or you're free to leave. Either way, it's good discussion, so I don't want to cut it off, but we are at our time, and I think there is a session coming in an hour or so. So we've got at least an hour more of questions. Any more questions for Jody at this point? Any other questions that folks have?
I know that the Soils Group has made contact with Learning Tree, but the Food, Land, and People program has been in existence since 1988, and at one point visited with the Price Societies. I think this whole area of the ag literacy, and we're specifically interested in crop soils agronomy, but in the big picture, it has to be a part of the total food system, environment, natural resource management. And I'm wondering if we don't need to make sort of a concerted effort among our three societies and related societies and organizations to develop more of a strategic plan for creating materials, for developing workshops and learning opportunities for in-servicing teachers, and then working more towards pre-service kind of activities. And along with that, having more of our university level faculty look at the federal funds for science and technology for K-12, where there is the higher education component that allows then for proposals to be submitted at the state level and for workshops then to be conducted that basically are totally free to the teachers who participate in those.
That's a long question.
Yes, so
there's a number of parts. What I will say is, again, there is next year is the 75th anniversary of SSSA. So there is a 75th anniversary committee, which I just got nominated to be on because I'm the head of the K-12 committee, that is doing some of what you're talking about and is trying to develop a what they call as a speakers bureau to try to get folks that will go out and be available to do some of this stuff grassroots. In terms of looking at what's available at the federal level, I would love it if somebody would have the time to do that. I have talked with John Hamlin, as some of you may know. He's in my department. He was the president of SSSA, did the Food Lane in Life, so very active in that. There are opportunities within NSF, and again, it would be for anybody out there, but I think it would be great if the K-12 committees, and I use all three committees, could work towards that goal, as well as this resident education A1 division. And I think one of the things that I've seen is that we're pretty fragmented, which sometimes is a good thing. Right now, I think we need to be more together on what the whole Tri-Societies effort is in K-12. I found out the other day that S5 division, which I'm also a member of, which is pedology, wants to do outreach to, and it's like, okay, let us know at the K-12 committee that this is something that you're interested in. It's a great idea, but we seem to be running in a bunch of different directions. So I would say for the K-12 committees, make sure your members know what you're doing as well, more than anything else, so that they, and particularly the division chairs and the board reps, so that they know that we're out there, so that you can get broader. Comments from our other K-12 folks, we basically agree at this point.
Yeah, that's really the point of discussion we had earlier, that we're so, like in the agronomy group, you cannot really just say agronomy without using soils, without using crops. I mean, we're just all interrelated to each other, that we can just, you know, measure everyone and have the same voice. Some programs within the
group,
something like that.
And I'll be honest, I think one of the biggest things that we need to do is get our website set up so that it's still branded to ASRC, but that it also is something that when a teacher looks at it, they can go, wow, I can use this information. And it's not there. Want to reach kids, it has to be something that a kid looks at and doesn't want to go to the site that has that website is a neat website. There's stuff on it that is interactive, it's attractive. I hate the links, okay? But, you know, Madison Avenue does know how to sell stuff. We need to sell our group.
Can I also add to that? I'm not Idaho, at Cherry School, but I'm a very interdisciplinary student in my dissertation research and in my professional work. And two issues that I run into as big barriers in the last year with helping both high school teachers and homeschoolers learn about soil and vegetable crops and agronomy in general is, number one, a lot of the websites, they really do have a focus on games. Soils is fun. Agronomy is fun. Well, you know, that's like, to me, that's like the entry level, is when you are saying to students, do this because it's fun. It doesn't really, you know, I mean, the teaching is very secondary. Well, a lot of the homeschoolers that I'm working with are very bright teenagers whose parents may be in natural resource management, things like that. And they don't want worm games, you know. They want to have their intelligence respected. And in turn, then, they will respect the intelligence of the subject. And so I'd love to see more of that. The second problem that I ran into is when I was asked last spring to help a local alternative high school develop some kind of school garden-based science curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. And trying to find material online was just insanely difficult. I mean, there was stuff out there on Purdue's website, you know, that's basically requiring that you have a science lab and a lot of time and a lot of equipment. And then there was the really, really, you know, four-year-old stuff. So I would really like to make a pitch for there being more material in the middle and to not be afraid to respect the intelligence of the students.